I'm Christian Corley, he's James McLean. You join us on a balmy late summer evening here in the UK. It's I don't know what it's like where James is, because obviously we're separated by the digits of the interwebs. But it's surprisingly warm here in the northeast, which is if you ever watch
surprising.
If you've ever watched Game of Thrones, we're the bit where Winterfell is. It's but it's surprisingly warm here. What's it with you? I mean, we haven't spoken for a few weeks, so you're having a nice summer, I gather. But what's the weather like at the moment?
It's very warm. I have some slight pyjama-y pants on, and they're sort of pulled up to my knees, and I'm wearing a shirt, and the sleeves are pulled up to my shoulders, in a way that if I suddenly had a heart attack and died, it'd really not be a sight that you'd want the paramedics or. You know, it's not the sort of first corpse sight that you want.
Are you also wearing a knotted handkerchief on your head?
No, I'm not. But okay. Yeah, it is that sort of look, more stylish colours.
Do you know that's got a name?
The Gumby.
No. You're kind of in the right general ballpark, though. Okay. It was coined by Douglas Adams and John Lloyd in The Meaning of Lif, and it's called a Sid Cup.
A Sid Cup.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Well, I thought it tuned in nicely with. It doesn't because. Forget it. I'll cut that bit. Anyway, so yeah, little Douglas Adams mentioned there. So we're here to talk a bit about Doctor Who, which is a long running TV show which will start from next year. We're going to talk about Doctor Who. And forgive me, I haven't done this for a few weeks. and I'm at sixes and sevens. And 12s and 13s, indeed. We're going to talk about Doctor Who. And, there's only really one thing to talk about Doctor Who mainly at the moment, which is who is going to be the 13th Doctor's companion. Because, you know, are they even filming it at the moment? I don't think they are.
No, I don't think so.
Because as far as I'm aware, we're still looking at September 2018 at the earliest. It might even be... spring 2019, but it'll probably be, from what we've been told so far, it will probably be September 2018 when it hits screens. So there's been this press report last week that declared that Bradley Walsh, who's best known in the UK for appearing in Coronation Street and as more primarily as the host of a quiz show called The Chase, that Mr. Walsh has been cast as a companion in the new series of Doctor Who. This is obviously the 13th Doctor era, this is Chris Chibnall's era. This is Doctor Who for the future, not for the past. And it's kind of raised a few eyebrows. I think it's probably the most politest diplomatic way of putting things. James McLean. Where were your eyebrows when you heard the words Bradley Walsh in connection to Doctor Who?
It took me a while to remember who he was.
Right.
Well, I mean, I don't watch ITV.
Sure, yeah.
As any critical, discerning person does. And, it's hard, isn't it? Because, as we've said before, you have Billy Piper, you have Catherine Tate... you have Nardole, you have various different sort of celebrity-ish, sort of slightly off-center from drama names, either in the worlds of comedy or in the worlds of celebrity, Kylie Minogue, obviously. And they don't tend to be bad choices on the whole. So while there's part of me which sort of winces at the idea of him, because he's sort of, presenters of game shows are sort of fairly... They're either people you love or you
don't,
or maybe actually you just don't care either way. Maybe that is fair enough. And maybe I'm in the middle there. So I suppose I'm an open book. I like the fact that he's an older character again, I mean, his background's acting, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, he had a football background initially, if I remember rightly. And I think he's done some comedy, but I mean, he was very good in Coronation Street, in which he played, Mike Baldwin's nephew, who turned out to be his son, in one of those types of soap revelations.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just I've just asked my researcher Google to, and of course Google's just offset it on Wikipedia, who's a terrible researcher.
But, yeah.
Go down the ladder. Let's have a look. Yes, I mean, yeah, his first acting role was in 2001, I think. Yeah, so murder investigation team. I appeared in two episodes of Sarah Jane Adventures.
He did. He was a scary clown guy, and he was really good as well. Those were, there's very few episodes of Sarah Jane Adventures that aren't good. There was a bar of quality that they maintained there, which certain other shows would have done well to follow. But, you know, I think we live in a classless society now, don't we?
But this is it. I mean, and I think probably one of the things which bar Billy Piper to some degree that connects the ones that have been quite impressive in Doctor Who tend to be because they're slightly older casters.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I wonder if that just gives them the certain strengths to actually play the show. Or gives them the arsenal, the assets, the munitions, the packed lunch, whatever you want to give them that, give them the ability to play it and do it well. So I think he'll be fine.
Yeah, I think everyone needs a packed lunch. But I think the difference with the
plastic box.
Yeah.
Plastic box with the plastic handle with the transfer on the front of some various license tie-in.
I had a Roland Rat one at school.
Oh, I think we all had all sorts. I remember having a Spider-Man one. Mm. There were others.
There were, yeah. Other lunchbox designs are available. The thing with Billy Piper, I think, is there was... It's casting my mind back, you know, 12, 13 years. Billy Piper, there was enough residual interest in Billy Piper as a pop star and as the wife of Chris Evans, who wasn't really doing anything apart from apparently living a life of being a millionaire married teenager. Prior to, I think she appeared in something with, she did a couple of things. I think one of them was with Dennis Waterman. I think one of them was a Shakespeare update prior to Doctor Who. And she got like reasonably good reviews. So I personally thought she would be good. And I think there was enough residual interest of her as a celebrity to kind of get behind the idea. I think with Bradley Walsh, I think this is a guy who is many things to different people. You know, he's an actor. He's the best thing about the British Law and Order, which obviously Chris Chibnall was heavily involved with.
Yeah.
He's a quiz show host. He's also a variety show host. And how you perceive Bradley Walsh is going to inform how you perceive that piece of casting. And that's why I'm concerned about it, because it feels to me like it's a case of, this guy's a great actor. He can deliver the goods. And then, you know, that's me saying that. Then, and I'm, you know, I'm someone who watches television, and I follow up on actors and follow their careers, and I know writers like yourself, writers and producers and directors. We're reading the end credits. Ethel over the road isn't reading the end credits. She's enjoying what she's watching from 7 o'clock to 7:30, whatever. And she sees the name Bradley Walsh in connection with Doctor Who, and is going to think, well.
That's really weird for 1975, because, like, I don't think anyone post-1975 has been called Ethel.
Well, yeah, well, she's an old lady.
Okay, sorry to just go there. But
and she's saying, why is a quiz show host on Doctor Who? And, you know, a daughter, Miriam.
Miriam, okay. Moving up the generation slowly.
She's saying, why is this variety host on Doctor Who?
But they also
is well, I'm getting, you know, in the 80s we had this, you know, we had all this kind of very cynical celebrity casting. We had Bonnie Langford, we had Sylvester McCoy to an extent, which like comes into that because he was like, you know, he was the very fringe of alternative comedy, and he was well known for doing other stuff and slightly risque stuff, and then he's dropped into Doctor Who, and at the same time he's doing children's TV as well. There's a lot of names in Doctor Who in the 80s. Honor Blackman. Beryl Reid. You know, you could sit here and throw the names out. The guy used to be in On the Buses, who's in Visitation.
Has that changed?
I don't think it has changed, but I think maybe the perception of the people that are involved in Doctor Who, who've been cast in Doctor Who, has changed. Whereas Bradley Walsh does feel very much like That right, very so, flashy Christian.
So you're saying, do you think that's because of, yeah, I mean, you could, one has to be careful, doesn't one, when we start making these sort of comparisons based on, do we still have the same type of what I would call, what I think you're referring to is in-house celebrity culture?
Possibly, yes.
Which is sort of names which circulate predominantly around the BBC, occasionally drift to ITV, but predominantly they were sort of names, sort of primetime names of the BBC era. Or if they weren't BBC, has that changed? I don't know. Or is it just our perceptions have changed?
Maybe.
I know what you mean.
I think
yes, because I think what you're hitting on is that sort of variety performance, the non-drama castings that were sort of particularly prolific in the 80s.
Yeah, Ken Dodd and Nicholas Barton. Neither of which
Hale
is a
Pace.
Bad actor. Hale and Pace, which is a different kettle of fish to the two that I mentioned beforehand, I feel. certainly late. I mean, I think that...
Well, they were ITV, weren't they?
Well, they were ITV. I mean, they've done acting subsequent to Doctor Who. As prior to Doctor Who, they were known as a comedic duo. I don't want to. I'm not offering any reviews of any of these people, incidentally. Names out.
You could certainly say, I think perhaps the difference between now and then, now we're talking about it, now my brain is thinking, is that the celebrity casting now tends to be for principal support characters, while they were more sort of cameo focused, a lot of them, not always, but Ken Dodd was like a 5-minute scene. Hale and Pace was a 5-minute scene. Yes, as you said, Bonnie Langford, Sylvester McCoy are obviously counter that suggestion. But a lot of those sort of in-house variety celebrity sort of personalities which were being dropped in because they were names that people on 5:15 on Saturday night, families would know.
Yeah.
Weren't normally in for the full run. They might be in for a larger than that. Thinking of Attack of the Cybermen, Jason Connery. But a lot of them were sort of fairly limited. Resurrection of the Daleks. You know, we all know we can't stand the confusion in our mind. Perhaps more than anyone remembers the casting. But
Alexei Sayle in...
Alexei Sayle. Again, yes, it's a slightly more substantial role. But the sort of roles which are sort of cast out now tend to feel a little more they're either high in the credit rating. So you're talking about like the supports to the principals. So they're in the whole thing, and they're normally dramatic actors of some form or another. Or if they are cast, like you say, from other the non-actor roles, they tend to be ones which again have a substantial meaty bit. You don't sort of get these sort of odd bod castings. Not that I can think of. I could be wrong. I mean, we are just spurring this off the tip of our tongues.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's my feeling about it as well. And coming so soon after the casting, which, you know, some people are happy about it, some people are less happy about it. I think majority of people are probably wait and see, or, you know, let's just wait and see how it goes, because obviously we can't comment until we've seen it. But the nature of how that was done with regards to what it did, the boss's first day, he does something which kind of causes this massive, I don't know if split's the right word. I think in some cases it is. I know a lot of people, you know, there's this rumor started by a well-known collector of the contents of dustbins out the back of the BBC, stating that Jodie Whittaker is not the Doctor, and that there is a scenario being introduced in which she's kind of a fake Doctor, as per an old Doctor Who magazine comic strip whose name escapes me at the moment, in which a peripheral character was pretending to be the Doctor.
Yeah, I think that person's going to be quite disappointed.
Yeah, probably. So yeah, so like following on from that, I'm less into reading the Doctor Who news and keeping up with what's going on with Doctor Who at the moment, especially with not being on board with the casting and also being the summer holidays. But you know, when something comes along like that, it just, you know, you've got casting, oh, bit of a surprise, lots of people upset, oh, and now we're casting a game show host. It feels a little unbalanced and uneven, and it also feels like there's a lack of confidence as well, perhaps, with what they're doing.
Or maybe they are simply just reorientating its focus. I mean, we've had 7 years of a very fan-intensive focus.
Yeah.
And we could be looking at them sort of moving it to a little more commercially minded. Because while I get your point about Ethel, there could be also a similar opportunity that Ethel might see that and go, oh, I like Bradley Walsh, I'll watch it. And it could be that sort of more superficial, that could be what it is. Because, I mean, everyone's always complained about John Nathan Turner's celebrity influx or infusion. But I was never quite sure whether it was proven to be useful. I mean, I've never seen anyone who's actually been able to sort of unearth whether this, you know, I know from a sort of snobbish point of view, fans go, oh my God, it's casting for the sake of publicity. But that is what a lot of casting is. But did it actually work? Did it actually make, you know, people watch it who wouldn't ordinarily watch it? Maybe there is stunt casting, was the word I was trying to think of. I don't know. I mean, as I say, I still find that while I was to say I'm not over keen on it, in the sense I kind of prefer it when I get castings where I don't know them, because then you go with that, you come into it with no expectations, like Bill.
Or no preconceptions.
No preconceptions, absolutely. But at the same time, every time they've cast, there's not been one that I've really thought to be miscast. I mean, even Nardole, I think, as we've said before, I think he was actually a good bit of casting in the end. It was just, he wasn't just wasn't very well consistently written, for me anyway. He just was occasionally too comical, where he didn't seem to need to be, and wasn't funny, as if they were writing for Matt Lucas rather than Nardole. But him as actual casting was actually quite good in the long run. So I don't know. I guess we'll have to see. But I see your point. I see I see the concern. I suppose after 7 years of what we've had, I'm kind of still a little open-minded that this is, again, it's a different direction to what we've had before. And to me, that seems more important than anything, that we just have something new.
Yeah. I mean, there's also the rumour that there's multiple companions as well.
Yes.
Which might indicate a change of format, which obviously Doctor Who's needed for at least 6 of the past 7 years, perhaps. I think as well, there was something else we were going to mention. Oh, no, that was the other thing as well. I was thinking about this because I've been doing a lot of driving lately.
Okay.
So plenty of opportunity to think when driving on things that are completely trivial. Like Doctor Who, let's be honest. And it struck me that, and it doesn't matter what the person looks like when they're naked, whether male or female. My thought was, why is Doctor Who, with a new producer of a critically acclaimed TV series, why is Doctor Who casting someone from one of those TV series, which she didn't have to have been, at a state where it is, you know, selling around the world in a way that it's never been viewed around the world before? Why is Doctor Who doing that now? Why isn't Doctor Who going for a Hollywood star now? Why isn't Doctor Who going for an American TV star now? British or American, you know, it doesn't matter. Why are they doing that low-key British actress thing rather than going for a big name? At this point in time, surely, from a commercial point of view, now is the time to get a big name. Now is the time to get a Hugh Grant or someone, you know, someone who's well-known. I was just thinking about that. I was thinking, really, it doesn't make any sense. I can't think of a good, solid reason why this isn't that time to push that envelope that they've just pushed through, that breaking that boundary, that international boundary. Why aren't they pushing it further now? Why are they going for that actress now?
Is that what you'd want, though? Just personally speaking, I mean,
well,
we talk about preconceptions.
I don't want a female doctor, so it doesn't really matter what I want, speaking. But if I was at BBC Worldwide, surely, you know, you've done all that work to get Doctor Who this global attention that is wanted for the majority of its 50 years. You've got it, and you're casting someone who no one has heard of at all. With no disrespect to Jodie Whittaker. But, I mean, doesn't seem to be the best piece of casting for a show with a global appeal.
But just to clarify, if they then cast someone who was Sarah Silverman, or someone who has a sort of global female appeal, would that still be frustrating though, wouldn't it? I mean,
well, yeah, but it would demonstrate that there is that urge to make Doctor Who what it's kind of often promised to be but never quite managed.
Well, maybe it's a fear of going down that route. The fear that then the actor starts overshadowing the show, and the show's always had a tradition of the actor not, by and large, overshadowing the actual, not becoming the vehicle for someone bigger. I mean, I don't.
Can I refer you to the 1970s?
Yeah. Go on.
Well, that was Doctor Who in the 1970s, wasn't it? You know, he had a big star of British television and radio playing the Doctor for the first half of the decade. In the second half of the decade, you have a movie actor who'd done bits and bobs, but
that
you
was
know,
stretching
by the end of the decade.
Actor.
Well, yeah, I know, but you know, by the end of the decade, it becomes the Tom Baker show.
But yeah, and that was at a point where they strip him down to a point where he leaves, and they sort of go back to someone smaller than the show. Okay, he had profile in the same way that Tennant had profile with Casanova, but he wasn't a label himself. He didn't carry his own baggage.
But I just think that now, surely now is the time. You know, it's 40 years on from that. There's less lessons. Well, I'm saying that lessons there that have been learned, but obviously lessons weren't learned from the Sarah Jane Adventures for class, were they? So.
I mean, I wonder whether, again, it's simply that it keeps it manageable. If the name of the show sells it, why bring someone in who is going to become problematic because their franchise becomes as relevant as the show? As soon as you have someone who has less power than the show carries, you have the ability to allow the show to move, and you don't have to overly worry about expectations or limitations based around that casting. I don't know. I mean, it could be tradition. I've never got the impression they've ever really looked to go that sort of scale.
Well, there was Hugh Grant, wasn't there? Who turned it down before Christopher Eccleston was offered. So they have attempted, they've gone in that direction in the past.
I just wonder if it's limiting. I just wonder whether in the end, you know, you go for casting. Do you lose out the opportunity of someone who is really good and quirky and unexpected by having someone else? I don't know. I mean, it's an interesting question.
And I think there was bigger names than Paul McGann approached as well, wasn't there, for 1996? So.
Yeah. I mean, I still think from the buzz I see outside of fan circles, it seems to have a positive vibe, far more than I expected it would, which is actually quite impressive. And I'll be interested to see where it goes with it. So in a sense, how that translates as a global commodity will be interesting. Whether the fact that they've got a pretty female makes it more sellable, or whether there are questions of female power that will make it unsellable, or whether there will be larger preconceptions on a global market of the character being a young man, or I don't know. I don't know how that will go, but we cried out for change, that we didn't do the same thing as they've done before. And to be fair to Chibnall, however this goes, at least the dice is being rolled that it's not just going to be what Moffat really did, and that was just adopt what Russell T. Davies did and just gave it his own little sort of fairy tale tweak that was very much his own sort of persona. So this will be different, and it will, yeah. I think as we've always said at this point is that it's just going to be a question of seeing whether it's any good or not.
Well, yeah,
that's the bottom line. But yeah, it's an interesting question. I suppose it would be something to be interesting to ask producers. It'd be interesting to ask people like Davis and even Moffat as well. What are those levels? What are those sort of restrictions? Why, you know, is it simply a money thing, or is there a question of identity? Is it a question of an unknown having a very tangible power to the show because people don't know who he is or don't really know what he'll be like? Because I imagine the amount of people who really knew Jodie Whittaker well was pretty small, apart from, well, I don't know, maybe Broadchurch gave her a profile, but I don't remember her in Broadchurch. I watched the first series and I barely remember her. And no. I've watched Attack on the Block.
She's much better in the second series. In the third series. She's more prominent and she does more in the third series.
Well, she was good in Attack on the Block, but she didn't blow my mind. I don't remember her.
Yeah, she's okay in that thing that's on at the moment on BBC One, but I mean, she's the focus of it, so it's very difficult to judge her compared to anyone else in it. And she does a perfectly good job of leading it, but at the same time, I think it's not her, everything she does is fine. I think there's certain things about the scripts that seem a little bit contrived. I think that's the problem that I have with it.
But so I think that's what's interesting, and maybe they like that. Maybe, you know, with the idea, because casting Doctor Who to some degree is stunt casting, because you put a lot of publicity through it. You really stretch it out. You get a lot of attention through it. And then whoever you cast at the end, you've had a nice chunky morsel of publicity that you've intentionally prolonged and manipulated.
Mm.
And maybe a slightly unknown person generates a lot more energy because people have no idea what they're going to be like, especially if it goes against their usual trend. I mean, maybe with Capaldi, one of the problems with Capaldi was people had very fixed ideas of what he was going to be like, and of course they went with them as well.
The writers went with that.
And maybe that sort of let people down a bit, that they were looking for something different and what they got was just a very bad-tempered Malcolm Tucker. So maybe with this maybe that's why they go with the unknown, because it keeps that interest, that charged interest, for longer than if it's a name that people think they know what they're going to be like.
We kind of agreed when we were looking back at series 10 that it was Capaldi's best stuff.
Yeah.
But do you think he was playing it intentionally, or maybe just through being immersed in Doctor Who in his life? Do you think he was playing it too close to Tom Baker?
It was very close to Tom Baker, yeah.
Yeah.
But then it was also, was it just his playing? Because the writing, there was very little in the writing that he could get angry about. A lot of his stuff was sort of deflection and quite passive, apart from a couple of episodes where he was a little more, the Rona Monroe episode in particular, he was given a little more charge. So it felt like they were all as if there was a mutual agreement that he should be more sort of stripped back and relaxed.
Yeah.
And it worked. We should someday do, as we've said before, some commentaries around particular episodes of Series 8, because they are actually surprisingly strong when you watch them again. Many aren't, but there are some really strong ones, and a lot of them are strong because he is doing something different. They have very clearly cast him as a very dangerous character, and then it still feels like, and as has been alluded by some people on Twitter, that they ran in the other direction, because it was, you know, quite an abrasive character, and some people think that was the right thing to do. I don't know. I would say it wasn't at the time. The more ferocious character was interesting to me. It was like, well, what makes House interesting when you watch House MD?
Yeah.
You know, you enjoy it because he's angry and crabby, but he's angry and crabby at the right people, and that's when it becomes sort of cathartic to watch.
Yeah.
But
I think they tried mixing it up too much with what was going on with Clara and her boyfriend, didn't they?
Well, yeah, the Clara, the boyfriend thing was the bête noire of that series.
Mm.
And it's a funny thing, again, it goes back to what you've just been saying, you know, in the car when you think about these things. And you think, from an audience point of view, these things seem really obvious, so why do they not do? You know, the obvious thing, as we said at the time with Capaldi, is especially if he's going to be an abrasive, older character, you need to really quickly get that dynamic working really well. So people go because they're interested in that dynamic. They're not looking at him as an old crabby man, because they've got a younger character who sort of lightens it and makes him accessible. And then, you know, we heard that Danny Pink was going to be in it. We think, oh, maybe they'll do like, you know, Ian and Barbara and the Doctor, and they can allow him to go off piece and be sort of crabby and Malcolm Tuckerish, because you've got these two warmer characters who'll pull him back and that. But they just never did it. They just let him poddle along by himself. And in the meantime, we had this silly romance story, which had no relevance to the. It almost felt that would have had more sense to have had with Matt Smith, because then you'd have had your triangle. You'd have had your young. Well, I suppose you had it with Rory to some degree. But with Capaldi, it just felt really. He didn't seem that bothered about it, apart from the fact he didn't like the guy. And the audience is split in two ways for a very short 40 minutes.
Yeah.
I wonder if they look back and think that's mad.
I hope they do. I hope they do. I hope there's a lot of looking back has been taken. I mean, it's obviously a new producer doesn't need to look back, do they? They just need to sort of like have been observing and think, well, I wouldn't do that, I wouldn't do that, I wouldn't do that. I'd do a bit of that, maybe a little bit of that. Oh, I wouldn't do that. But I mean, hopefully the people involved do look back and think, what the hell were we doing? Or that really didn't work. Why didn't we go this way? Or maybe just, why didn't we listen to the podcast with a K?
Well, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't more expect often. Them to do that, but that'd be nice if they did. But it's that whole idea of seeing what's gone wrong. And it still amazes me that. It still amazes me that seemed, as we were talking about it before Series 8, it seemed such a simple process. And they just made it in such a mess. In the end of Deep Breath, it seems like they know what they're doing. They've found this really great touching scene between her and him after he's been so abrasive the whole episode, where he is now the vulnerable one and sort of says, you know, you can't see me. And that's a really thing. You think you've got it right here. You've got the fact that he's abrasive, but yet he's vulnerable. He needs someone to help him. So she becomes the sort of almost like the nursemaid. Well, nursemaid is probably a bit too much of an ageist. She becomes the person who can sort of enable him properly.
His interface.
And that seems perfect. And what they do in the next episode, he dumps her in Glasgow and he heads off by himself. And suddenly you feel that dynamic just split and cut away. Why? You want people to make him feel lovable but fun. And yet angry and cathartic. Why are you doing this? And I suppose that's what always makes, you know, commentaries like this interesting before a series, because you don't know what you're going to get. Capaldi seemed like really obvious how they were going to do it, and they just went in a really weird direction. Who knows what they'll do with this? This could be either really great and exciting with a larger team, a fresh actress playing giving it a different energy. That could be interesting, or it could be just like Missy and, you know, same stories, same arcs, and it just feel off kilter and rubbish. So you, who knows? You just don't know. So that's what I suppose makes it kind of interesting to talk about.
Indeed. Well, we have indeed talked about it, and this brings us to the end of this week's podcast with a K. It's been nice to be back. James, at least, will be back. I might be back. We'll see how it turns out. Until next time, it's goodbye.
This is a Beyond Casterbrus podcast. Available on iTunes, Audio Boom, Stitcher.com, Player FM, and BeyondCasterbrus.com.